Well, the world is a dumpster fire, and nothing here makes sense. And you vacillate between crippling fear and constant self-defense. And nothing's right and nothing's good, and you're paralyzed with grief. Don't kill yourself, just have a cup of coffee.
Welcome to Coffee Over Suicide, the dramedy podcast about mental illness and choosing life over death, one cup of coffee at a time. I'm your host, Chris Parker Howard. And much like last week, it's one cup of tea at a time because I am sick, my friends. And I've been coughing my head off trying to get through this introduction. And hopefully we'll get through it. You know what? We'll get through it together. I believe in your power to help me do this. Today on the show, we have got Jared Schmidt, and he even sings a song, and it is really great. But you know what could have been better? The audio quality. That has nothing to do with the guest. That has everything to do with me. And the fact that I had let myself go into a downward spiral of depression for months and months, and then when I finally decided to force myself into cracking out all the gear and setting it up and booking a guest to come in here and see if I could still do this, I didn't really bother to check the gear. You know, there were so many other things that I had to worry about doing. I had to figure out how to dress myself again. I had to figure out how to shave, how to care about getting up, how to make myself get to work and feed myself and take care of people and do all the things that you're supposed to do when you're a person that people rely on. And it was hard. I'm going to be honest. That stuff was hard for me. It was a difficult time. I didn't really know what to do, but I knew that I wanted to get this back on the rails, and I had started to pull myself out of the muck. And so I booked some people before I was really even ready. And I'm glad I did, because if you wait for perfect circumstances, you're going to be waiting forever. Sometimes perfect is the enemy of good enough. And sometimes good enough really is good enough. I would much rather have this podcast out in the world being a little flawed in the audio department than you never hearing the conversation, because we have an awesome conversation. Now, I talk about the audio like it's not great, and it's okay, it's fine. And I'm probably beating myself up over this for no reason, because it's probably not that bad at all. But one of my microphone inputs wasn't working, and I wasn't sure if it was the microphone, the input, the cable. And I had a guest here, and I was fumbling around with stuff. Brand new studio, I was so proud of it, and and I can't get my gear to work. You know, it just, it's a lesson. It's a lesson. Take a deep breath. Believe in yourself. But, you know, let's set the ego aside if we can. So I set up one microphone in the center of the table, and we had a really great conversation. We talked about a lot of things. But, you know, I think about the way that having that not work affected me for just a minute. And the way that it would have affected me, let's say even 2 years ago, 3 years ago, hell, 5 years ago, I would have been a mess, a complete mess. I don't know if I would have been able to find a solution and move forward. I think I would have been way too focused on the problem that was in front of me instead of actually looking for some kind of solution. Because I hadn't wired that into myself yet. There's so many things that we get from talking to ourselves that we don't realize. We're programming ourselves for failure by using the language of failure. You know, I would have told myself things like, I can't get this to work. It doesn't work. This is all fucked. What am I supposed to do about it? I can't have nice things. Good things don't happen to me. It's like you just start, sending out these prayers into the universe until they're answered. You know, it's you're telling yourself what you need to believe about yourself rather than telling yourself anything useful. I don't know. I'm a firm believer in that. I'm a firm believer that the language that we use to program ourselves is really, really important. And I don't talk to myself like that anymore. And I try not to talk to other people that way. It really matters when you say things like, I wonder how to fix this, instead of, this fucking thing is broken and I don't know how to fix it. Well, I mean, I could figure it out. I could probably figure it out. And if I can't, I can forgive myself for not knowing what the hell I'm doing. And I guess that's a little bit about what I'm doing today. I recognize I didn't have to tell you that the sound quality was off. I could have just let it play and it'd probably be fine. You never even would have noticed. But see, I still got a little bit of that in me. Just a little bit of that in me. And I'm trying to weed that out. And you know what? By talking to you, I think maybe I have realized that it's a thing I've got to fix. And I think it's going to make me a better person. You know what? We're helping each other here. Have I told you how much I appreciate you today? And I do mean you, whoever you are, wherever you're listening from. I hope you love this conversation. Here's me and Jared.
Yeah, exactly.
So what's happening, man? How you doing?
I'm doing okay-ish.
That's as good as it gets some days.
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah.
Some days out of the house, anything out of the house is a good day.
Yeah?
Sometimes, yeah.
Do you have trouble getting out of the house at all in general?
Yeah, I've been dealing with some newly discovered and appreciated anxiety and depressive issues. And
yeah?
Yeah. Like, and some, like, life happened, and then in the middle of dealing with that, unpacked, like, a lifetime worth of other shit that I was not prepared for. Things that I should have taken care of years and years and years ago, and it all just, like, ran over me, like a runaway car, dude.
Was it just the idea of, I'll deal with this later?
So kind of what I don't want to dig too deep into it because I don't think I'm prepared for that right now. But, so what happened was I had a pretty major breakup.
Yeah.
That in many, many ways felt a lot like a death.
Yeah.
So in the process of kind of mourning that and trying to pick up the pieces and move forward, I started to, really come to terms or begin to come to terms, with a death that affected me 10 years prior.
Yeah.
Almost to the date.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so I was kind of forced to look at something that was happening in real time as well as something else that had happened a decade earlier and that I didn't deal with as it happened.
Yeah.
And got to see firsthand just how dangerous and chaotic not dealing with your shit can be.
Yeah.
Especially as a young, impressionable person who is convinced they know everything about the world, but
sure.
In reality doesn't know shit.
Yeah.
You know, and so, yeah, just life happens and it gets cruel sometimes. And if you don't deal with it, man, there are some really gnarly consequences that go along with that.
Totally.
So, yeah.
So, I mean, how do we get from there to here? So where were you at 10 years ago? Like, what was Jared doing?
Well, by now, this is like 13 years by now, but,
yeah,
I was living in, Cheyenne, Wyoming, my hometown. Just not really, focused too much on anything.
Yeah.
You know, had, some musical projects going on, but nothing too serious. Was, in a kind of the last legs of a relationship that was, you know, trying to salvage. And, you know, so there's 23 years old, just kind of be, you know, coming into my own.
Yeah.
You know, as a young man. And, then, I got a phone call from my mom, telling me that my uncle was in a car accident and perished. And so that was shocking. And
yeah.
I had to deal with that. And I had a lot of family come into town that nobody had seen each other in forever. So it was tense and sad and happy at the same time. It was a very weird, bittersweet thing.
Yeah.
And then a few weeks later, my best friend, roommate, and musical collaborator passed from an accidental drug overdose. Oof. And that just, you know, that changed everything.
Yeah.
So, and that's, you know, that's just skimming the surface on it. That's the headline.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. But honestly, I mean, isn't that enough? I mean, that's...
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, I could spend days and days and days talking about it and how it affected me. And how I either consciously chose not to deal with it or thought I was okay in not addressing it firsthand.
Yeah.
And instead, you know, everything was okay for a while until it wasn't.
Yeah.
And then you fast forward years and years and years later, it's like, it's like there I am at 23 all over again.
Yeah.
Except I've got another decade of experience on top of that. Could
right.
never have imagined myself reverting back to something like that and having to deal with it. I mean, like I don't want to equate it to, I don't know what a soldier goes through, but it is in effect
sure.
PTSD.
No, it is. Absolutely.
But it's, you know, it doesn't come from, you know, an assault or a crazy personal attack or physical violence or anything like that. It comes, it just comes from being a participant in an event.
Yeah.
And man, I had no idea what I even had going on with myself in those 10 years. Like, you look back and it explains quite a bit about some of my behavior and my reaction to certain things and
yeah.
my narrow view of the world. And, you know, back then I wouldn't have seen it at all, but hindsight's always 20/20. So
yeah.
It's like, if I could reach back in time, I'd slap the shit out of myself. Get a grip, dude.
Do you find yourself in your own head a lot?
All the time.
Yeah.
All the time.
I mean, if you think about it like that, if you're the kind of person who's kind of in your own head a lot, it's actually pretty easy to disconnect yourself from other events because you're kind of processing. It's
absolutely.
Like in one sense, you're more sensitive to a lot of things, but in another, you're almost anesthetized by this bubble. And
mm-hmm.
so it kind of stops you from processing things completely.
Absolutely. Yeah. You only have the capacity to deal with so much
yeah.
at once, you know, and it's almost like I don't even want to say your brain. It's like your entire body has a governor switch.
Yeah.
And once you reach that threshold, good luck letting anything else in. Good luck getting anything else out. You're stuck there until you're done with it, whether you get through it and have like a therapeutic breakthrough or not, or you fall asleep because you're exhausted from it or whatever. You're lucky enough to get a distraction. And that was something that, like I said, that was kind of new to me. It's maybe something that I did subconsciously for a while, but all of a sudden this became my life, my experience. I had to, like, it was like becoming a new person, you know,
yeah.
or coming out of a chrysalis. And it's like, whoa, what the shit is this? I'm not just a caterpillar anymore.
Yeah.
I'm a dusty old moth now.
So. How was your family at processing grief? I mean, was that a thing that everybody was kind of...
That's interesting.
I mean, what's the... Take me back just a little bit to get... I guess some, let's say, local cultural understanding of the universe that you're living in Wyoming.
Hmm.
Like, so what was the average everything like? Did you grow up religious? Did you go to church? Things like that?
No, I had a pretty liberal upbringing in that respect. I have my mom's mom was very Catholic,
uh-huh.
But she was like the most religious person
yeah.
in either side of the family.
Yeah.
You know, everybody else just, you know, you went to church when you had to.
Right.
Or when somebody got married.
Funerals.
Yeah. Yeah, there weren't, unfortunately, growing up, there weren't a lot of those. So.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't remember spending a ton of time in church. You respected the church. The church, it wasn't a joke, you know.
Right, yeah, yeah.
But I was not ever made to go a lot.
Right.
You know, I opted for, you know, Sunday school for a while, or, mm-hmm. you know, read through a Bible or two.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was that was not a huge part of my upbringing.
So what was the, it was mainly like blue collar? What did your folks do?
Yeah, my dad worked for, he was a pipe fitter for a little while, and then worked for the post office for 30 plus years.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a job and a half.
I guess, yeah.
Yeah, that's, I mean, you could make a whole life out of that. Mm-hmm. I mean, it doesn't get more, I mean, that sounds like a Bruce Springsteen song, you know.
Yeah.
Pipe fitter, then working for the post office for 30 years, you know. So are you folks still with us?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Retired? Actually, yeah, my dad just retired recently, in the last year or so, after his gig from the post office. So he's just kicking it up there in his robe and slippers and not answering to anybody.
Yeah. That's the way to do it. Mm-hmm. I mean, my folks, you know, they just retired and they're, you know, they're traveling around and, you know, doing whatever they want to do, yeah. Which is nice.
I mean, I'm glad my dad, you know, is able to retire. He's fairly young.
Yeah.
You know, still in, you know, his mom worked until she was in her 80s. Yeah. Not because she had to, but she's honoring, you know.
Right.
She doesn't have any quit in her. So, you know, it took forever for her to retire. And my dad's, you know, the apple doesn't fall far. He's a hard worker.
Yeah.
And he doesn't handle boredom well. So,
yeah.
He'd just as soon be asleep as bored. So,
I mean, that's definitely a sense that I get from you, is that you don't handle boredom well.
No. Except I don't know. I need to be occupied all the time.
Yeah.
for everybody's benefit.
Well, and especially if you're a person who's in your own head. I mean, the moment there's too much silence, you know, you're done for.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, I make goofy noises. I fidget. I'll find anything to entertain myself.
Yeah.
So I don't have to sit there and think too much about one thing if I can help it.
Oh, yeah.
Otherwise, yeah. I become my own distraction. And it's not always a bad thing. Sometimes it's a wonderful blessing, and I can pick things apart and enjoy it. But if it's if it's something I'm unsure of, or particularly like an issue that I'm having a hard time internalizing.
Yeah.
Oh man, that could be a nightmare. That gets fucking fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, in all the wrong ways. But,
yeah.
I mean, I'll crack jokes about it, but it can be. It can be pretty devastating, you know, especially when it's something you're not, that's kind of new.
Yeah.
Where you're just like, oh, what the hell is this? And how do I get myself out of it? Like,
right.
Like, I never really handled panic attacks. I never had to.
And, right.
In the last couple of years, I've had a few. And finding myself talking to myself how to handle something so that I don't have a meltdown while I'm in the car.
Yeah.
This is like not a good place to be, having an issue. You know, like trying to work my way out of that kind of a puzzle, man, that gets interesting, but it's like the climax of a dramatic TV show. It's
yeah.
Like how are they going to get out of this before the next commercial break? Well, I don't know. You kind of go into autopilot and you figure it out.
But yeah.
That's kind of amazing. It's also kind of really frightening.
It is. So. Because when you're in it, I mean, that's your reality.
Yeah.
All there is that that reality. And it's like, this is never going to go away.
It's who the fuck is this person? And how did they get here?
So how do you navigate stuff like that? Having never had to navigate it before... You know, a lot of people, especially, you know, panic attack people, some people start having those later in life. But, I mean, the vast majority of people at least have some sort of escalating events of panic attacks and mm-hmm. things like that. You know, a lifelong best friend of anxiety that's kind of walking with them and just kind of escalates to the point where it becomes full-on panic attacks. But, like, you know, if you have that sort of escalating behavior,
mm-hmm.
you can at least sort of recognize it and kind of move forward with it and say, I sort of recognize this. And, but if you've never had a panic attack, it's got to be nuts.
Yeah, it is. And in you phrasing it that way, that's very interesting because that's very relatable. It's like you said, this walking best friend of anxiety. Yeah, I had some sorts of anxiety growing up, but yeah. I had no idea that's what that was. Right. That was just me having, I was a teenager. I was having a perfectly normal reaction to something.
Yeah.
Or this pissed me off when I was X age, but why couldn't I let it go? Why did I let it affect me so much? I was just, man, I really had an attitude problem back then. And, you know, maybe that was true, but also, like, then I get to, as you said, the escalating thing and where I'm at now.
Yeah.
I finally have all this shit. I have to sit there and look at it and deal with it because it's consuming me. What do I do? Well, naturally, first thing I did was grab a bottle and drink myself.
Yeah.
And like, I'll fix it with, you know, some whiskey or some wine.
There's some answers at the bottom of this bottle.
Always. Every time. It's super effective and it works like a charm.
Yeah.
You know, and then I actually stopped drinking for a little while. Mm-hmm. And just because somebody was like, hey, maybe you should, you know, not do that. And they didn't tell me that was going to save my life or that was going to save our friendship or whatever. It was just, hey, why don't you challenge yourself to see how you do without it for an indefinite period of time?
Yeah.
Well, I kind of took that to heart, and I went 5 months, which is enormous for me, without drinking anything. And I felt great. And then I started going to therapy, and I started writing more, which is great, but it also kind of sucked because as you start to write about things, who knows what you're, you know, going to write about. It's going free form, not giving myself any rules, much like this conversation. And then all of a sudden I come to, you know, these events or this thing that happened today made me feel or reminded me of something that happened in the period of time that I'm, you know, heaving all this crap out now.
Yeah.
Man, that brings up a lot of feelings, or it starts to make you look at yourself like when you're young and invincible and you know everything, nobody can touch you.
Yeah.
It was an older person with, you know, quite a bit of patina from your battles.
Yeah.
You look back at that person, you're like, who happens to be, you know, myself. And I'm like, man, what a dumbass.
Yeah.
But how do you get through to that person, to that stubborn person? Well, I've always had to learn things the hard way. So if there's anything I'm good at, it's, you know, taking the path less traveled.
Yeah.
So,
well, I mean, that's the thing to recognize is that you're still that stubborn person.
Yes.
You've just learned how to incorporate that into a life that involves other people.
Yeah. So I've somehow managed to listen to my friends and try to take an objective look at myself, which is not an easy thing to do because I'm still stubborn.
Yeah.
And I still learn things the hard way.
Well, and it's difficult to confront something about yourself that you don't like and have to make a decision about it.
Or things that I'm not aware of. Again, I'm, you know, in this scenario, I'm dealing with things that, like, I've always had stuff about myself that I didn't like, but I'm dealing with things that I didn't even know were part of me that maybe other people did.
Yeah.
And now I'm finally being forced to confront it. And I sure as shit didn't like that. So in handling some of these things, then I start to deal with self-esteem issues, which I guess is a creative type. That's not the most uncommon thing.
Like, right.
I think everybody deals with that to some degree.
I mean, as a creative type, you've got the look at me disease.
Yeah.
Like that all of us have.
Or I look at my own stuff and I'm like always my own worst critic. So
yes, absolutely.
That's hard to look at my own work objectively because I'm just, we'll probably come back to that in a minute as to why that's hard. But, you know, but then I'm also a performer. So I have to stand up in front of people and be confident and tell my story, do my craft, and you know, while I'm all of a sudden I'm looking at myself from a different light. I'm just like, I do not like what's happening with this person. This
yeah.
how I'm developing and growing here. This is not the man that I'm was raised to be or how to act. Who is this? Who is this? And it, you know, I'm still the same person I've always been, but I don't have to be miserable. I'm learning how to climb out of that hole, which has been a hell of a process. But
again,
it's hard to be a performer and keep a positive attitude and to we have these, I don't want to say personas, but people have a very narrow view of who we are as individuals.
Sure.
You think, you know, social media is wonderful at it giving you just a taste of who somebody really is.
Yeah.
But, you know, you it's so hard to be confident and positive and happy when you have all this shit just caving in on you.
Yeah.
That, you know, sometimes it's not, it's almost too much to bear, you know?
Yeah.
And this is just on, you know, small levels. And you wonder how people who we look up to handle it. And some
yes.
of them don't.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, some of them handle it to an extent, and then you start to, you know, something drastic happens, and then, oh shit,
yeah.
we had no idea.
You know. But as the front person for a band, are you aware of the dichotomy of the person that you are on stage versus the person you are off stage?
Sometimes.
Yeah?
Yeah. Sometimes I can flip a switch and just perform, and it's not that big of a deal. And those are actually really fun nights. Sometimes I'm a nervous fucking wreck, and
yeah.
I don't want to bare my soul to anybody because it's a little too close.
Yeah. And where does that come from? I mean, you're sitting there on stage, you know, a place you've been a number of times, you know, big crowds, small crowds, tables and ashtrays, you know, just everything in between. And then one night, for one reason or another, for no reason you can put your finger on, it's just something about this is just fucking with me.
And it could be a number of things. It could be what kind of day I had. It could be yeah. walking into the place. I mean, it's like triggering any type of anxiety.
Yeah.
You know, you just never really quite know.
You brought it with you. You just didn't
know
it.
Yeah. And sometimes that's what I came there to do, is to exercise that shit and get it out. And it's like, well, I signed myself up for this, so I guess I got to go out there. And I don't mean to like downplay it. I love performing.
It's
a huge part of it. And I don't mean to turn it into a chore, but it's like, it's not always, you know, as easy as it seems or as it should
yeah.
be. And of course, like, it doesn't affect my bandmates quite the same way. They go out there, they're happy to do their thing, and I'm
right.
just, maybe it's the lead singer in me. I'm just like, oh.
Well, it does.
They gotta drag me out there.
As the front person, it does fall on you in a lot of ways, and it's, you know, because you are the face and the personality
sure.
of the front of it, and
yeah.
and the rest of the band, I'm sure, understands that. I mean, that's why you're there. Because it's like, yeah, we all decided that this is the guy. Like, we're backing this horse. So you're the horse.
Oh, I guess. I don't like that at all.
Yeah. But that's
it's
true.
No, you're right.
But,
it is,
but
true.
It is. It's true. And on some level, you've got to be conscious of that.
I think in other bands, I was probably a little more unaffected by something like that. I don't really like to carry the lead singer torch.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess I'm kind of awkward that way. But in like Last Rhino, for example, all these songs are really personal.
Yeah.
They all, like, even if they're just drowning in metaphor, they all come from something very real. And whether that is something that I wrote or Andrew or Matt wrote, regardless of who's singing it, these things came from somebody's experience.
Yeah.
So it's easier to take that seriously and, excuse me, and it's easier to take that seriously and sing that in a way that I have to be hyper aware of what that's about, because I have to be delicate with it because it's somebody's story.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just something that somebody made up. It's not just an opinion. It's not just a bunch of words thrown together that sound cool.
Right.
It's, you know, somebody's life was impacted by whatever we made this 6 minutes turn out to be.
Sure.
So there's, you know, I have to handle it with kid gloves.
Yeah.
And that's a hell of a responsibility, you know, and you can't explain that to everybody either, because once the audience hears it, who knows what their reaction is going to be.
Yeah.
They get to respond however they respond.
Right.
And
because at that point, it's not yours anymore.
Exactly. And, you know, I can't tell somebody how they should react to it or how it should affect them. You just kind of throw it out there and hope that it works.
Yeah.
It's a little magic trick, you know. And I think that makes that responsibility that much more precious in that case. Like, if I'm especially if I'm seeing somebody else's words, because again, there's that responsibility. It falls on me to be that face, that voice, and connect that to an audience.
Right. And, yeah.
And again, when you're having a hard time and you're seeing a bunch of bullshit, it's easy to fake. When you're having a hard time and you have to take on that set of songs that is that intense to me on a personal level, takes a lot out of me sometimes.
I've seen you perform, and so I know that you really treat it like a communal experience. You have a connection with the audience. Mm-hmm. You talk to the audience because, you know, you're in it together.
I mean, you talk about church earlier. There's me going to church.
Yeah, exactly.
There's my congregation.
Totally. No, and absolutely. And that is, I mean, that's why church is still so powerful mm-hmm. for so many people. Is you get enough people together who are excited about something at the same time, it feels great. It's infectious. Something about the pheromones mm-hmm. in the air, and you know, the way that human beings just interact with each other as social creatures. And so with taking all of that in and this newfound anxiety that's, you know, intensifying, and the depression that you had mentioned, if you take these things and you start trying to extrapolate them, do you find that the music is a thing that can pull you out of a state, or does it intensify it?
Yes. That's it. The music has been the single most cathartic part of the process.
Yeah.
Whether I am listening to it actively, like choosing what I'm listening to and sitting down and paying attention to it, whether I'm listening to it passively, choosing something for background, or whether it's in a car or in a store and then something catches my attention, whether I'm creating it or just playing it, or going to a concert, especially concert going, that yields the best results. I never have a bad time.
Yeah.
Never. 99% of the time.
Right.
I don't have a bad time. And even on the bad nights, you usually can pull something good out of it.
Yeah.
That shit moves me, man. I go to the right concert, whether it's local or a band that I've been listening to for forever, I'll go into orbit.
Yeah.
Just so happy to be there. It helps me compartmentalize stuff. It helps me forget about shit that doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. It helps me connect with other people. People who might know what I'm going through, who might not be aware that I wouldn't share that shit with.
Yeah.
It's much easier to connect with somebody when you're face to face with them, or when you're sharing an experience with them. What a wonderful feeling to have.
Yeah.
So concert going and anything with music, really, doesn't matter, is awesome. Even sad music. I'm a big fan of sad music.
Yeah.
I don't, people think I'm crazy for it sometimes, but it gets a lot out. I think it's beautiful.
No, like, absolutely.
I'm the guy, I do not mind falling apart at a concert.
Yeah. I mean, why do you think the blues has endured?
Oh, for real.
You know, there's something wonderful and beautiful about being able to connect your pain to art.
Absolutely.
You know, giving it a voice and, you know, somewhere to put it, especially mm-hmm. if you're processing something.
Yeah.
To have music be able to pull something out of you and I feel so much better, you know, now that I've had an ugly cry.
Oh, for real. And it happens at the weirdest places. Like, I remember being at the top of Red Rocks I'm ashamed to admit this now, but at a fucking Ryan Adams concert.
Yeah.
Just up by the fucking hot dog stand with my palms in my eyes, just like, this is so awesome.
Yeah. Whoa. But again, I mean, it's an emotional experience that you can't really describe to someone.
No.
It's like trying to take a picture of the Grand Canyon and telling somebody, you know, this is what it is, because it's not, you know, you can't explain it to someone. They've got to experience it their own way. Mm-hmm. And so as far as the depression goes, like, how did that first manifest in you where you were like, there's something going on here beyond just being a sad bastard?
Wow. That's I like the term sad bastard. I use that a lot. I had some episodes at work where I caught myself thinking about things that didn't feel like my own thoughts. And that was a focus on what I had in my life, but not in my immediate vicinity. And this gets kind of funny and also kind of dark, that I could use to harm myself with.
Yeah.
Whether that was, you know, a weapon at home or something sharp or whatever, you know, you take the contents of the clue weapons, you know,
yeah.
like how could I arrange for this? And, but the funny part was that I worked in an environment with a lot of really dangerous elements. None of those were of any consideration whatsoever. It was almost like they were like
too obvious,
silently off limits because they were within arm's reach. When I told my therapist that, she actually like kind of laughed at me, and I was like, "What the fuck?" And so that's funny now, but at the time, it was like, "That's why I'm here,"
right? Yeah,
like this isn't a joke, and it wasn't a joke. It still isn't,
right?
But yeah, those when I started to kind of focus on self harm things, I was like, "Whoa,
yeah,
that's not cool. That's not me.
Yeah.
I might be." Go sulk about something for a while and be angry for longer than usual guy, but I'm not make idle threats, go harm myself, go hide in the dark and you know, do things that you hear about people doing. That's not me.
Yeah.
That's no fucking way. But then I realized that I beat myself up a lot over a lot of shit.
Yeah.
A lot of shit that doesn't matter. A lot of shit that does matter. Might not matter to you or the next guy.
Yeah.
Sure as hell matters to me. And I take that shit hard. That was hard for me to admit. And but everybody who's been in my life for more than 20 minutes knows that about me. I'm an intense guy.
Yeah.
I don't mean to be, but I can be. And you know, and I used to not realize how energy bounces off of other people until this ramping up of anxiety comes along. I started to become way more sensitive to other people's energies.
Yes.
And
raw nerve.
Yeah. Oh man. And so looking inward there, I start to see, you know, I am harming myself.
Yeah.
I'm harming myself by being my own bully, by beating myself up. And if somebody wants to throw shade at me, I'll fucking take it. I'll throw it back. But as I walk away, oh man, it comes crashing down inside.
Yeah.
And that's hard to do. Or somebody, I would get into it with a loved one or a coworker, and on the surface, I might be a little fired up and I'm handling it okay. Inside, oh no, man, I'm cracking the whip.
Yeah,
you know, it's hard. So when I started to get to that, that's when I'm like, okay, I need to do anything other than what I'm doing.
Yeah,
and I reached out to a couple of friends that. And I don't know why they surfaced the way they did, but it was surprising to me. And I had two advocates that were like, yes, go write this shit out, go to therapy, just go.
Yeah.
And therapy is weird. It's so cathartic, but it's like hiring your own fan for an hour.
Yeah.
You know, it's like sometimes when... Sometimes I don't want my therapist to agree with me, and she validates me and lets me do my thing. She doesn't judge me, doesn't tell me, not all the time. It's sometimes, you know, and she's awesome, but sometimes it's so weird that like I could have the same conversation with a friend, and they just don't get it.
Yeah.
But they're also a little too invested.
Yes.
Completely free, I get absolutely negative results from it.
Yeah.
Go to my therapist who's a relative stranger. And I come out feeling like a fucking champ.
Well, yeah, because your therapist doesn't have any interest in telling you something that's not true.
No.
in the interest of saving your feelings.
Mm-hmm. She also has an uncanny ability of taking my own words and delivering them to me in a way I can understand myself. I give advice all day. Not that it's any good. I have a hard time telling myself the same things, you know. She's been incredibly effective at it for a lady I only see a couple times a month or whatever.
Yeah, I'm so. In the same boat. I'm seeing somebody now, and she's great. Yeah. Like, it's the same kind of thing.
I wish I... And this is another thing in retrospect. I wish at 23 years old, when I had the worst summer ever, I wish I had even thought of therapy. I didn't know that was a fucking thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I did, but I just didn't take it seriously.
Right. But I mean, that was probably, it probably wasn't discouraged by anybody in your family or anything like that.
No, but nobody, and not.
People just didn't think about it.
No, nobody was like, hey, you should consider going to a therapist. Or if they did, and I'm not saying it never happened, I just don't recall that really being a consideration.
Yeah.
And I probably wouldn't have gone.
Yeah.
Honestly. That young stubborn kid who knew everything didn't have a problem. He was going to be okay, which is kind of how I ended up where I did it in the first place.
Yeah.
But man, and it took a while too before I realized this was a problem, like years.
Well, and there's a thing, and maybe this is true to your experience and maybe it isn't, but I can tell you from growing up in a fairly blue-collar environment, you know, one of the things that I noticed a lot was that people just didn't go to the doctor, like, if they weren't feeling good.
Right.
It's like, let's figure it out on our own, and if it gets so bad that, you know, like I'm bleeding or a broken arm or something like that, then I'll go to the doctor.
Is it broken?
Yeah.
Can you move your hand? No, you're good.
Yeah. So, I mean, it could be that same kind of thing. There's just something in that mentality of, you know, wait until it's severe before you've got to deal with it.
Yeah, that's interesting, too, because I know people that'll be like, oh, I wheezed once when I breathed. I got a WebMD, and I have everything known to man.
Yeah.
So I got to go to the doctor. I'm the exact opposite. I'm
like, me, too.
If I can get out of bed, I don't feel well enough to go to work, okay, get out of bed, I don't need to go to the doctor. Yeah. 10 days later...
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I still feel like shit, but you know what? I'm upright. Cool. I'm good to go.
Yeah.
Doctor, what's that?
Yeah.
You know, and certainly I never considered myself to be mentally ill back then.
Right.
You know, so why would I go to a doctor?
Yeah.
It wasn't, it's like, I've got my friends.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, they're great. I love them. But was that the answer that I needed? Hell no. But
right.
Yeah. Good luck telling me that.
But there's that, there it is right there. It's, you know, I ended the day alive. Which means I'm handling it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, what a foolish way to look at things, especially at 23 years old.
I mean, in a way, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, if you just track the progress of those kinds of thoughts, it's of course in your 20s you're invincible.
Yeah, you know what's funny though is at 36 now, after dealing with all this shit, and I make it through the day alive. That's a true win.
Yeah. Yes.
Like it's reckless. It's reckless. In hindsight, right now, it's exactly what I'm aiming for.
Yeah. Exactly. Look, let's just get through this day.
Yes.
Like, yeah. And sometimes that's enough.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, seriously. I mean, we started off the conversation with how's it going. It's like, oh, it's a good day if I got out of the house. I made it out of the house. So, you know, and thank you again for giving me something to look forward to.
Yeah. I mean, I also have a tendency to isolate, especially when things aren't going well, or if I have an issue that I'm trying to solve, or that I if I can't articulate my feelings, then I can't tell you what's going on with me, you know? So how am I supposed to explain this to you if I don't know what the fuck's happening?
Right.
So, especially in cases like that, where it starts to really burrow in there deep, and... you know, it's like a dog with a bone. You just sit there and you just worry at it. You just worry at it until it's nice and beautiful and smooth. And
you're speaking a language I understand.
Yeah.
It's like, look at this beautiful problem that I've been working on for so fucking long.
And you're almost proud of it because it's, you know, it's so well crafted.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a rough one. And so, like, you made the decision, yeah, fuck it, I'm gonna go to therapy.
Yeah, that was one of the best things I ever did. You know, there wasn't anything super profound other than that, hey, I'm not crazy. I'm not losing my mind. This is real. And things that I felt were ignored or pushed aside for a long time, either by myself or by people I was trying to express myself to who didn't have the capacity to understand it themselves. Yeah. Not to blame anybody, but to, you know, just, I don't know how to explain that. But anyway, it made everything tangible and real.
Yeah.
And if it's real, it can be dealt with.
Yes.
If it's in my head, who, you know, who cares?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And I get the same way, like, oh, this is my problem. I shouldn't make this other person's problem. So I'm not going to burden them with it. Burden's a big word.
Yes.
And you know, you try to do the right thing by not making it somebody else's thing to deal with. I think that's the right and wrong approach. I think you have to know your audience.
Yeah.
Know who you can go to, which is why therapy is great, of course, because they're there to be on your side.
Yeah.
Not to browbeat you, not to judge you.
Exactly.
Give you shitty advice.
Like, yeah.
Like your well-meaning, well-to-do friends. But, yeah, no, and don't let me discount that. My friends are wonderful, and I wouldn't have gone without them. I wouldn't.
Well, right, but that's a whole other, thing. I mean, the dynamic of a friendship is not the same thing as going to see someone who's there to help you, you know?
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's almost like, and this is discounting it heavily, but it's almost like the dynamic of, you know, making a sandwich at your friend's house versus going to a diner.
Yeah.
You know, there is something different about, I'm going to go see a professional, and there's an understanding of the dynamics of this relationship. You know, it's like, you know, I come in and tell you I got a problem. You give me a grilled cheese. Like that's what it is. And everybody accepts that this is how it's supposed to work. And so, you know, like when I go to my therapist, I went in right out of the gate with, this is what I'm having a problem with. And, you know, like just coming right out with some pretty heavy personal shit and saying, I want you to know who I am first so that you have some context for what I'm about to say and the kind of person I am before I say these things. And now let's go. Because I don't want to waste either of our time by being worried that I'm going to say something that's going to be problematic or shocking or frightening. You know, it's like I need to come right out of the gate with, you know, I have suicidal thoughts all the time, and sometimes they're hilarious. And I've learned how to deal with it, and it's just become a part of who I am as a human being. And so I have all these other issues as well. So let's get into it. And so I need you to know who you're dealing with.
Yeah, I really was kind of, you know, reluctant to go talk to a stranger at first.
And yeah.
It's like once I got comfortable with her, I mean, it took all five minutes.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden I just opened up. But I kind of, in a way, I kind of equated it to going to a record store, which I go and go with a list of things in my head that I want to look for. And I immediately get distracted. I might not walk out of there with anything.
Yes.
But I'm going to spend some time browsing.
Yeah.
I'll find some things that surprise me. Find some things that, ooh, I need to think about this later.
Yeah.
Find some things that, like, oh, shit, I can't believe this is going for that much. I can't justify that.
Yeah.
I still get something out of it.
Yeah.
But,
there's something beautiful about
just
it's almost like, I mean, that is a form of meditation. When you're just going through the racks and all you're focusing on is the music that's in front of you and the emotions there. I mean, you're being present in something. That is meditation.
Man, I wish I could look at it that way, because now that I think about it, sometimes the expansive choice of a record store will also give me a great deal of anxiety.
Well, yeah.
It'll just
that's the other
me.
Side to that coin. I mean, of course it is.
Yeah, I was even thinking about this to myself the other day, because I would often use that as a joke, but I was thinking about, oh, when did I first start getting anxiety? And I'm like kind of turning back the clock, thinking, and I'm like standing in Blockbuster in like 1991. I can't decide between this game or this game, and Dad said I could only get one of them.
Yeah.
Dick.
Yeah, it's like, oh, man.
Gotta go to the bathroom.
But Toe Jam and Earl,
right? Exactly. You know, it's like, that's my first bout with anxiety, and how trivial is that? But then, as an adult, like, I still do that shit,
right?
Except it's crippling now.
There
are real consequences.
Well,
to it.
That's because you don't realize it that there's all of these little moments that you're feeding, and as you feed them, they get stronger and they grow, and you start incorporating them into your reality as this is just how things are. This is how I operate.
Yep.
And so, you know, unless you have a frame of reference that what you're doing is unhealthy or unhelpful, you just assume this is how it is and you just keep moving forward, especially if you're that stubborn kind of person who thinks that you're handling things really well. You'll see a problem come in, it'll feel bad, and you'll go, it didn't knock me down, so it must not be bad enough that I've got to worry about it.
Well, you just summed up that 10-year period we were talking about a
little bit ago. Well, you're welcome.
Thank you.
That'll be $8.
Sweet.
But how are you managing things now?
Oh, sometimes I don't.
Yeah.
I'm still learning to deal with it. Every day is a new day.
Yeah.
And some days are awesome. Some days bring absolute hell along with them. Sometimes it is absolutely what I make of it and how I choose to deal with it. Sometimes it's absurd and I can't. It's like steering a car into a mine shaft. You don't really want to do it, but it's pretty, like, deliberate.
Yeah.
When you do. I mean, everybody does that, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think everybody does in some way.
Yeah. No, sometimes it just can't be avoided, whether you like it or not, whether you're aware of it or not. And, you know, so I'm still, it's almost like going through, you know, your teenage years again.
Yeah.
Because everything's so hypercharged and new. And I find myself being really sensitive to certain things. And again, it's like hitting this weird emotional growth spurt.
Yeah.
It can be incredibly rewarding and it can be really frightening sometimes.
Yeah.
Very frustrating.
Well, and that's the thing that people don't tell you about, personal enlightenment. Is that that process can really suck. The process of getting smarter and more emotionally in touch with things and more mature, it can be a really painful process.
Yep.
Because in a lot of ways, it is the loss of and the death of the previous self who didn't have to deal with those things, who didn't know those things.
Yeah, I guess... To go back and answer your question a little bit better, one of the best things I've done, which has been the hardest, is to cut toxic things out of my life. So, and that's obviously much easier said than done.
Yeah.
I think especially everybody's got, you know, baggage and bad habits of varying degrees.
Yeah.
But getting rid of people who made me feel a certain way,
yeah,
has been really bittersweet, because it's been very healthy to get away from them.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really hard to leave some issues unresolved. It's hard to cut off relationships that were once very meaningful.
Yeah.
But it's incredibly important.
Yeah.
And that's not to say that people don't change and you can't go back. But, you know, you're allowed to defend yourself. You're allowed to do what's right for you. And if that means you got to, you know, press pause on some socialization or whatever, go do it.
Yeah.
For fuck's sake, for everybody's sake.
Yes.
Please.
Yeah.
You know, go take your break. Go to timeout.
It's in everyone's best interest in your immediate vicinity that you take care of yourself.
If you and a friend are battling and having some really nasty, gnarly issues, get the hell away from them.
Yeah.
You know, like nobody needs, you can be resentful, you can be catty online or something if you need to.
Yeah. Totally.
Leave it at the adolescent levels of bickering and don't go any further with it and everybody will be fine.
Yeah.
You
got to find somewhere to put your problems. Otherwise, they're just going to be in you.
But also, something that helps with, too, is if you remove that section of what your problem is and see what happens.
Yeah.
Just like when I stopped drinking, for example. And, I mean, I drink now, just not very regularly. So I'm not trying to be like a teetotaler or anything.
Yeah, yeah.
But... once I took alcohol out of the equation, I could no longer blame it for my shortcomings.
Yes.
Which really pissed me off.
Yeah, of course it did.
I wanted it to be that simple.
Because it was a beautiful place to put things and also help you avoid things.
Man, bottles hold all kinds of shit, right?
Oh, they sure do, right?
But
mostly what you bring with you.
Yeah, once, right? Once I was able to set that aside, it was like, okay, I can't blame that.
Yeah.
So now I got to do something different. Now I have to look at this from a different perspective. When you remove certain people from your circle, and again, I'm not trying to say everybody needs to isolate themselves. You shouldn't isolate yourself, but if you remove whatever is bothering you from the equation, you no longer can put the responsibility on its back.
Yeah.
So you're doing yourself and that person and really any relationship that you have a favor by not letting that thing fester and poison the other stuff as long as you're willing to address it.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it's, I guess when you ask me what I'm doing, I'm trying to remove things that aren't good for me, which is not an easy task at all. And trying to do more healthy practices. I've been kind of like quietly flying off the deep end. So, I've got a mountain to climb just like anybody else, but it's my mountain.
Yeah.
And it, some days I can see the summit. Some days it gets longer and longer and longer.
Yeah.
So,
well, it can be a daunting task. I mean, think about it like this. You know, they say the body is a temple, but really, I mean, if you just look at it like it's a house, you can slap a new coat of paint on it and feel good about it for a minute, but if the wiring is fucked up, you know?
Yeah.
And on top of that, to come to the realization that the wiring is fucked up, and now you've got to do something about it, and to make a decision to do something about it, some of that wiring you're going to rip out yourself. Some of it, you're going to need some help because you're not a really great electrician.
There's a movie, Life is a House, with Kevin Klein.
Yes.
That touches on that very much. You know, like, you got man's faced with his mortality, starts building a house knowing he's never going to finish it.
Right.
And then watches his family deteriorate as a result. Everybody takes baths outside.
Yeah.
You know, it's a... I was going to go with the Andy Richter analogy. The body's a temple and mine's one where monkeys shit all over it and tourists disrespect it or whatever. That's it. You get what you put into it. And again, it goes back to the toxic things. You want toxic shit in your life? Go ahead and keep it around. See what happens.
Yeah.
You're not doing yourself any favors with it. So, you know, you have to take care of home first.
Yeah.
And that's hard.
But it sounds like you're working on it.
Trying.
That's good.
I mean, as long as I'm trying, that's better than the alternative, and which is, you know, literally nothing, and nothing's dangerous.
So, yeah. You want to play a song?
I sure can.
Let's
I haven't practiced it or anything.
Let's do
Excellent.
It.
Excellent. This is an important song. Dying. Close enough for me.
All right. What's this called?
This song's called Woke. So earlier you asked me a little bit about some of the things and how music plays into handling things, and I kind of rode on the whole concert going bit, but writing with my band and performing these songs, which I said were very personal in nature, that helps a lot. It's scary as hell, kind of, you know, being that vulnerable, but I think it's important. This song, Matt started. And, you know, he was kind of struggling with it, and he gave it to me, and first I didn't know what it was about, and we joke all the time that it's about, like, staying up late and not being able to find anything on Netflix, so you just fall asleep. There's that whole choice paralysis thing again. There's too much going on in Netflix. Then he finally kind of fessed up that when he first started writing, he was writing about watching me kind of struggle with some of my issues that I've been going through, which is the anxiety and depression, the isolation, the self-esteem issues, You know, this guy's one of my best friends, so he kind of sees it in a way that other people don't. You know, there was some substance abuse issues that he saw firsthand, and you know, and he kind of knows my story, and so he started to write it out, and then he gave it to me. You need to not only hear this and see this, you need to fucking sing it and help me finish it.
Yeah.
Whoa, what a task. So, you know, over a course of a couple of weeks, I think maybe not even that long, we tried just about every combination of music that we could with it, and finally got it feeling the right way. I remember listening to a bunch of Elton John and David Bowie one night and getting real sad about something. I don't remember what it was. But then I ended up in one of my kind of isolated states and put pen to paper and contributed or wrote my contribution to this song. And this song's called Woke. I don't really know. It's going to be weird without the rest of the band, but it'll be cool.
Great.
No. That's it.
I lie awake at night, I struggle and I fight when there the pins beneath my skin, the sharp echoes of the sin night. Oh, wish I could fly. Way up here, it's light.
that's why we practice.
It was great.
Thank you, man.
Thanks for talking to me.
Hey, thanks for having me. Thanks for making this available to people. I think it's really important and really fucking cool. And I'm glad to know you, man.
You got it.
Did I really just say you got it to him saying glad to know you? Jesus Christ, I sound like an asshole. That is the most ridiculous thing I could have said. This is why I don't have friends. This is why I don't have friends. But I'll tell you what, if you want to get some music, you should go to facebook.com/lastrhinomusic and get your ears full of the sweet, sweet stuff. As for me, I'm going to try to figure out how to talk to human beings in a way that's not just flat out embarrassing. And see if I really can do that. Until next week, don't kill yourselves out there.